Here on chapter 10, which can be Avigdor's Teshuva, which can be found on page 377 and 378. Avigdor's Teshuva is divided into parts about how to do Teshuva. The first couple of chapters talk about Teshuva according to Nigla, and then from chapter 4 and on, he talks about Teshuva according to Kabbalah. In these chapters, we say there's a difference of opinion as to what exactly is going on over here. From chapter 8 and on, so some want to say that these are chapters according to Hasidic philosophy. Mm. But even with Hasidic philosophy, so it's divided into the something that he introduced back in chapter 4, the idea of teshuva tata and teshuva ilah, the lower level of teshuva and a higher level of teshuva. So we talked before that the very basic level of teshuva is, or the simple level of teshuva is that a person did something wrong, he feels bad about it, and he resolves never to do it again. And that, by definition, is teshuva. But that's not enough, because the word teshuva means to come back, and that a person wants to reestablish a relationship they had with the Almighty. Just put that over here. That as they had before, as to the word tashuv means to come home, and said that there are different ways of approaching that. The first one he said, which is the teshuva tata, was with hachnas alev, which was a downtrodden, a downcast spirit, being a master of accounts and looking through one's deeds, and feeling a sense of lack and therefore a desire to come closer to Hashem, and recommended there the giving of tzedakah. In all instances, he always recommends giving tzedakah. Okay. Then, with this section, chapter 9, he started talking about teshuva ilah. Okay. At no point does he ever say that the baseline for doing teshuva is fear of punishment. That's never comes into the equation. That is not our gig. We are not afraid of punishment. That's not why we're doing teshuva. It's too trivial. So, but rather, this idea of teshuva ilah is basing it on the statement that he made way back in chapter 4, that our relationship with Hashem, based on the verse Yaakov Chevel Nachalasei, that Jacob is the lot of his inheritance, and translates the word Chevel not meaning a lot, but Chevel meaning rope, and that our connection to Hashem is like a rope. When you pull on one end of the rope, the other end of the rope gets pulled. And therefore, what we're trying to do is to schlep. For us, we're basically trying to pull the rope up in this instance. Okay, and by pulling the rope up, we hope that the relationship that we have with the Almighty becomes now on a higher level. That's what we've said till now. That brings us up to chapter 10. So, v'hinei v'tshuva ilah zu. Now that we're talking about teshuva ilah, this higher level of tshuva, v'isdveikus ruchai v'ruchai, and his idea of our neshama, our soul, our spirit, feeling an attachment to Hashem, al yedei teira ugmilas chasadim. And he said before that a very simple way, it simplifies it before, is how does one do tshuva? That if a person till now learned one chapter a day, so he should learn two chapters a day. If you learned one daf a day, we learned one page a day, you should learn two dafs in a day. Because that way, it's sort of like the idea of the thickness of the knot, since we're using the example of a rope, the thickness of the knot is four times the thickness of the rest of the rope. And so therefore, this relationship that we have, that we're building, is even on a greater level than it was even before the person did tshuva. And then says, and expresses that it should be done through a person's tshuva, ma'asim tovim, his Torah, his learning, and then also gemilas chasadim. He also brings in again the idea of tzedakah. In this chapter, he's going to talk about davening. Okay, so he says this whole deal is who mevuchinus hamshacha milamayla lamata. This is drawing down godliness from above to below. In other words, let's take a very crude example. Person slights someone, and afterwards he feels really bad, the fact that he slighted this person, and he resolves he's never going to slight this person ever again. Okay, so that's all very well and good in that vacuum situation, but what about the guy that he slighted?
Right, exactly.
He hasn't done anything there. There's nothing to improve the relationship.
Right.
So the improvement, so he had a relationship before with this person. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to slight the person.
Right.
If he didn't know the guy, never met him before, never had nothing to do with him, he never would have been able to slight the guy. Okay. So this, now that he feels really bad for what he did and he resolves never to do it again.
You need a relationship to slight somebody?
You have to at least know the guy to slight them.
Or run into him once.
What? Yeah, you have to have come in contact with the person. If you never come in contact, you can't slight the guy. So like this, so he wants to establish this relationship with this person. So, but there has to be something coming from that person too.
Yeah. Right.
That person has to reciprocate. Has to reciprocate and say, yes, okay,
sure.
I want to have a relationship with you. So what we're saying now is that, or what he's been saying through this last two chapters, is the higher level of tshuva is not coming from us. We talked about in chapter 8, we're talking about the idea of kapara.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Kapara atonement. We talk about Yom Kippur. Who's doing the atoning?
Hashem.
It's Hashem is doing the atoning.
Sure, yes.
You're doing the pleading, and Hashem's saying, okay, that's what the atonement is Hashem saying, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so now this higher level of tshuva, this relating to Hashem in a higher way, is now more so coming from Hashem, and relates directly to different levels of love of Hashem that there are. Talked about in the 40s in Tanya, different types of love of Hashem, which love is always translated as a desire to come close. If you love something, you want to be around it. Okay? You want to have it. You want it to be there with you. So a lower level of loving of Hashem is just an expression, not just, is this expression of wanting to come close to Hashem. Okay, but a higher level of Hashem, he says actually there are many, many, many levels of Hashem. But the greater level of loving Hashem is Avas Olam as opposed to Ava Rabba, like we say in davening. Mm. You know, the more you say Ava Olam Avtani, and then Ava Rabba Olam, etc., etc. So what's Ava Rabba? Ava Rabba, he said, is a Matana Melamaila. You know, that a person should want to have a burning, passionate love affair with Hashem can only come if Hashem is saying, yeah, I'd like that too. The expression two to tango, You can't have a passionate love affair if there's nothing else to have this love affair with that's expressing the same thing back. So the level of Ava Rabba is a mitana, it's a present from Hashem. Hashem says, I'm giving this person a measure of love back. So that this person can have this feeling towards me. So it's the same thing also with tshuva tata, tshuva ilah. Tshuva tata is totally completely dependent on us. The lower level of tshuva, that the person should make the initial effort in wanting to get closer to Hashem, is totally on our efforts. What are we doing? What are we showing? This, that it says that a person is now achieving a higher level of teshuva, a higher relationship, is because he did such a good job with the lower level of teshuva that Hashem says, yeah, I'll cut this guy slack, yeah, I'll have a nice relationship with this person. In other words, you can't do teshuva ilah by yourself.
Right.
You have to get Hashem involved there. Okay, is there going to be a difference in ramifications? We're not talking about what happens when a person's 120. No. At this point, because all a person at 120, all he has to do is the second before he dies, say, Chatasi, and he's already a tzaddik. Yeah. Okay, so we're not worried. We're not talking about that.
No, we're talking about living.
We're talking about being alive.
Yeah. Does it seem to be easier or harder at that moment to say Hadassim?
I can't tell you because I haven't been there.
And I thought you said to wait till chapter 12.
Not planning on showing up there.
Yeah, I'm not planning to get there anytime soon. I have no idea. But
you think it's so easy, but you get so much for it, no?
Don't want to know.
You don't have to wait till then.
Don't want
So the so this is all coming through us. But he says now the tshuva ilah, that's a hamshacha milamayla lamata. That's coming from above. Leos dvaravaya mamish bepiv, kvashikos vasam dvarai beficha. That this person, how does a person know they did tshuva ilah? It's sort of like you shouldn't be measuring or counting. Starting, if you're like marking it down in your calendar, today I did this, and today, I achieved this much as far as my relationship with God.
This is a tshuva for something between a person and Hashem. Is this compared to if I slighted somebody? I haven't hurt Hashem. I hurt that person.
That's correct.
I would know if I did tshuva.
Well, that's easier for that person. Yeah, because I gave that as an example. Here you're talking about Hashem.
Okay.
And here it doesn't mean that a person did something wrong.
Right.
Because as close as you are to Hashem, you're a tzaddik gomer. And as close as you are to Hashem, you can get closer to Hashem.
Yes.
Oh. So tshuva doesn't mean just for doing something wrong.
No,
tshuva is a state of mind that a person feels a connection to Hashem.
Yeah, connecting.
And it's very hard to answer the question. If you're a tzaddik gomer, what do I have to do to get closer to Hashem? And how do I know when I reach
it? You don't have to be a tzaddik gomer.
To
ask that question. You could ask that question now.
Right. I know what I can do.
You could ask, what can I do to get closer to Hashem? Okay. We all pretty much know.
You start the class off with, we learned two pages. If we did one, if we do more than what we were doing before to get close,
that's what he said. To show, if you love Hashem, show him. Okay, a person could always do more. Of course, without getting neurotic, because then it becomes a yetzahara.
Yeah.
Okay.
But rather,
right.
This is Hashem doing it. It says that the person is in the groove. Okay, as it's when it says "Va'asim Devarai Beficha," Hashem putting words in your mouth. I will put words in your mouth.
Hmm.
Okay, that this person is in this person who's doing this Ava Rabba, the person who's doing the Tshuva Ilah, the person who's on this level, is in a groove where he's just like so in tune with the spiritual. And it's an interesting point. At this point, the Rebbe mentions in 1967, 68, after his mother passed away from praying every Shabbos, and he explained a small portion of Igeres HaTshuva every for praying.
Really?
Yes. And it's in a book. There are books that have it. And at this point, chapter 10, he said, oh, by the way, just to remind you, the Igeres HaTshuva is not a standalone entity, but rather it's part of Tanya. And the very beginning part of Tanya states, "Kikar v'alecha hadaver ma'od b'fichol v'avcha la'asaisai." It's very a pasuk in Chumash that says, "It is very easy in your mouth and your heart to do it," meaning to serve Hashem. And if the Alter Rebbe is bringing it in Tanya, so we're not talking about tzaddikim. Mm-hmm. We're talking that this is kikar v'alecha hadaver ma'od for every person.
This is for us, folks.
Right. This is not the tzaddik's level of teshuva that we're talking about.
Folks.
This is talking about the average everyday person's level. The average Joe in the street can attain this. They can attain this relationship with Hashem. What's preventing them? They are.
If you want it.
The only thing that prevents a person is the person themselves.
That's it.
Okay, but this seems like this is like, but wait a minute, I have to get Hashem's attention. Hello, Hashem, you listening? Anybody home? Okay, it's not like, if we would have these like, be these big tzaddikim with Ruach HaKodesh and have some sort of insight and be able to understand what it is that Hashem wants from us. And, well, the bottom line is that we do. Because every hir hor tshuva, we're told, is how is it a person suddenly decides, you know, I'm going to have a relationship with Hashem. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from suddenly? What planet did that fall off? And the answer is that actually comes from Hashem, because it says in the Gemara that every single day a voice rings out from Chayrev, from Mount Sinai, meaning from Hashem, and says, Shuva alive, Shavim Bani, return to me, my children. And so every once in a while, what do? Is we say,
sometimes we catch.
I think sometimes we get a little wisp.
Sometimes we catch
of that.
Yeah, sometimes.
And so we decide, okay, now I think I want to have established a relationship to Hashem. Yeah. Hashem is not saying that when Hashem says banim, Hashem doesn't mean tzaddikim. But it says, you know, we says b'nei b'chori Yisroel, my firstborn Israel. It doesn't say b'nei b'chori tzaddikei Yisroel, my sons are the righteous ones of Israel. Okay, so it says even the average person has the Rebbe wants to emphasize at this point. He didn't say it earlier.
Yeah.
It says specifically at this point, I was wondering about it, says, yeah, you know, it's because at this point, a person might be thinking, looking at this and saying, that's not for me.
Way out of my,
way out of my league. I am not, this is for the big boys.
Yeah.
I can't do this.
Yeah, no.
Comes along the Rebbe and says, if it's, the Alter Rebbe put it here, he put it here for us.
Yeah.
For every, each and every single one of us.
Just wasn't filler.
And so that each and every person, you don't have to be a tzaddik to have a spiritual intuition, to have a certain sense of spirituality.
Yeah, I agree.
All a person has to do is be open to the possibility that such a thing exists. We talked about it when learning Shaar Yichud V'Amunah. The idea, first of all, of recognizing Ashgacha Pratis.
Yes.
That a person should understand that what's happening to them at any given moment is happening because it's part of the grand design that Hashem wants to have happen.
Yeah.
And if a person can sort of take a half a step back and objectively look at the things, and look at it like if you'd be looking at your life like through a camera doing a documentary, and you happens to be about your life, okay, and just like taking a half a step back and seeing what all the different players of this documentary that you're that you happen to be watching,
that
all these things that are happening to you, and realizing that all the shuffling around is not happening by chance. And that Hashem is directly involved with our lives. Because whether we're aware of it or not, we have a tremendous relationship with Hashem. Hashem wants to have, more than we want to have a relationship with Hashem, Hashem wants to have a relationship with us. And we have that. That is ongoing. We can't get away from it. Person can't say, listen, God.
Thank God for small favors.
Just leave me alone. I'm going to go do my own thing. Don't bother me. I won't bother you. Okay? On an outside way, that's, you know, we say people, you know, the relationship that you have with Hashem is the relationship you have with Hashem. That's the relationship that you're going to have. And Hashem's going to say, well, I still got your back.
Yeah.
I'm still right behind you. And when you turn around and you want me, I'll be right here. Just give me a holler. Okay? Because we can't get away from this relationship that we have with Hashem. And this we have to do is just cultivate, see that it's happening. See, it's there.
Yeah.
Okay. It says that with the right hand he draws me close with acts of kindness, that kindness is his right hand. And again, stressing and emphasizing the giving of tzedakah, and that Hashem wants to have a relationship with us. So this is now where he puts in the main point of this chapter. Aval Adam Atachtin, but the average guy, Tzorech Liyelech Memedregim Amata Lamaila, It says, okay, so let's say the person is in a groove. He does feel a relationship with Hashem. So now what? Now he can go home and go to sleep, right? No. Okay. Now the work begins.
Now what do we do?
We have to, a person can never say, oh, that Judaism stuff? I did it.
Yeah, ouch.
I'm done. I'm good now. Okay? Whatever that Judaism, I did that. No, because whatever it is.
In there,
no. Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm good. No thanks. I did it already.
Check that one off.
Yes, yeah. I'm moving on to the next thing on my bucket list. Yes. No.
Yeah, you probably are.
Right. Oh, that's so mean.
I anyway. Know. I'm not a nice person. I know.
Anyway, so that person now he just got it. Now the person has to start.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now, because whatever level it is the person has, now they're just it's always where it's square one. Again, without driving ourselves neurotic about it.
Yeah.
But when you wake up in the morning, that's your starting point for today.
Yeah.
That's where I'm ready to pick myself up. This is now I'm now a square zero for today. And where am I going from here today? Okay. This happens to be a crucial part in self-help. All the self-help books say, don't worry about the big picture. Get through today.
Right. The next 5 minutes.
Okay, so all the stuff, the self-help part of 12 steps, the whole business, all that, it all says,
yeah.
The thing is one of them over there says, is okay, I'm thank you for giving me, we say, Maida Ani, thank you for giving me this day.
Right.
And I'm prepared to take on the challenges of today, and that's all I need to worry about today.
That's sufficient.
Okay, you hear it on every it's like so apropos in this every sporting event, either before or after any sporting event, you hear the coach. Okay, we're focusing. We're not worried about the next game. We're not worried about the playoffs. We're not worried about whatever. We are. This is our worry. We have to focus on what's today. Right. And then when it's done, he says, okay, that was one game, and we did that one, and now we have to worry about what's going to be with the next one. And okay, it's always just what's in front of you right now.
Right.
Okay, my grandmother used to say, the expression that she used to use was, you have on your own plate. Don't worry about someone else's.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if you're focused on what's in front of you,
right.
So that's what we have to worry about. Okay. Yeah. So here, this person's doing good. We're not talking about person doing bad. We're talking about person's doing good. If this person were to analyze his life, he'd say, you know, I mean, sit down and really do a good account. Would say, you know, I'm really in a pretty good place, spiritually speaking. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying such a thing.
Right.
Okay? Of course, a person could always say, I could do this better, I could do that better, I wish I was doing that better. But a person could also say, but over the years, I really think that I have improved in this, and this, and this, and this, which is also very important. A person should know what they've accomplished as well. Mm-hmm. The person should know their own mileage. A person should know where they are. Mm-hmm. And then realize, okay, so this is where I am, and of course, I could be doing better. But it says there's a Hayom Yom that says from the Rebbe that says that there's an expression, Hasamach Bechelko is a Maila in Gashmias and a Chsarin in Ruchnias. A person says, I'm happy with what I have. If you're talking about the physical world, that's great. Because a person says, I got enough stuff. I don't want to buy any more stuff.
Stuff.
Okay? My house is full with as much stuff as I need.
Right.
Okay? That's a terrific thing.
Yeah.
Okay? And only that, but even though the guy next door to me has more stuff than I have, or better stuff than I have, I don't really care. I'm good just the way I am. That's a tremendous person. That's a wonderful thing. But if a person says, I've achieved a level of spirituality which I'm comfortable with, and I'm not interested in pursuing it anymore. That's basically death.
Yeah.
Because a person has to be continually growing. And this is where a person can look and say, wait a minute, the guy who sits next to me in shul, what a yold he is, and he's able to do what? I for sure should be able to do better than that. And that's already a good thing. Being jealous of another person's stuff is 100% wrong. But being jealous of a person's accomplishments that you should be able to accomplish more than that person accomplished is a very good thing. So the...
So we can direct jealousy in a good way.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In kosher way.
Oh, kosher jealousy, for sure. Okay, as opposed to kosher jello, yes. And then, so, where does the beginning begin? Where does a person's journey begin? Where does a person's day begin? Is with davening. We've been talking now, excuse me. We've been talking about learning, about stucca, doing mitzvahs. Mm. Now, so the Alter Rebbe really wants to bring out the heavy artillery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the howitzers he's bringing in over here. Mm-hmm. Okay, that what?
Now we're playing marbles for keeps.
Huh? Now, is davening. Okay, an expression of feeling of a cleaving of spirit through davening. Okay, this is at this point people should be ready to close the book. Okay, because to learn two pages instead of one, it takes a dedication. To give $10 instead of $5, okay, that takes some effort. But to daven and focus takes complete and total absolute giving up of self. And that is hard to do. Mm. That already could be like the breaking point. And you think, but it's only davening.
It's a daily struggle.
Only davening.
Davening, every word of davening. We've talked about davening before and what the Baal Shem Tov wanted to focus on. Okay. That the one of the major pillars of Hasidic thought is emphasis on davening.
Mm.
Because there is no greater tool for personal refinement that was given to the Jewish people than the Siddur. When the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assemblage, put together the Siddur, aside from the fact that I taught a class in Shemayna Esrei once.
Mm.
It took about 6 months, meeting on a weekly basis.
Mm.
Okay, because of all the different layers that they put in with each bracha.
Every word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, aside from that, but just the whole formula that goes with it, starting with a Moda Ani and ending with an Aleno and an Altira from beginning to end. Yeah. And what a person's supposed to be doing. And it's specifically, you have statements from the Zohar such as Shas Tzelusa Shas Kerava. The time of davening is a time of war. Because the animal soul is saying, I don't want to be less of an animal. I'm very happy as being an animal. Mm. I like my taivas.
Mm.
Okay, I like who I am. I like my physical pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to make them less physical for me? You want them less for me to be less of a pursuit? I'm not willing to give that up. It's like when the Alter Rebbe was arrested the first time. When he first came for him, it was in the middle of Sukkot, and he didn't want the holiday to be disturbed, so he slipped out and hid.
Mm-hmm.
When they came back for him 2 weeks later, after Sukkot, so he went to Shmuel Mokus and asked Shmuel Mokus, should I let them take me? Because we know a tzaddik is a master of his own destiny. Should I allow them to arrest me? And we know this from the Bingham story with the Alter Rebbe when he's crossing the boat to Kirish Levana, and he stopped the boat, the whole business over there. We're not going into the stories right now. But he was in prison, but he was in charge. And same thing with the Friedrich Rebbe. He was in prison, but he was in charge. It was on his terms.
Right.
So he asked Shmuel Munkus, who was a, as you can see, a close confidant, should I let them take me? And his response was, of course, Mamanashach. What do you mean Mamanashach? Mamanashach means either way you look at it. He says, if you're a Rebbe, so then nothing will happen to you. But if you're not a Rebbe, and then you're putting yourself in danger, you deserve everything you get for taking the geshmak of the Olam Hazeh from so many people. From taking out this the idea of having pleasure from the physical world introduced through Tanya, that was suddenly now it's like, you know, I can't have my pleasures. You know? Not that we're saying you can't have them, but you just can't have pleasure in them. Do them, but do them because you're serving Geshem.
Right.
Okay, so here it is now. What's going to improve a person's and heighten a person's sensitivity to spirituality? Well, it becomes easier if a person is less grub. Okay, if a person is, you have an analogy, you drink wine. Okay, you can drink wine out of a ceramic cup. Or you could put it into a fine crystal glass. Why do they have fine crystal glasses? It's, as far as I'm concerned, the alcohol content didn't go down or up when you put it into a glass. It's going to have the same kick as if you're drinking it out of a mug or a paper cup. It says, no, if you put it into a fine glass, it now becomes a way of a true appreciation. That's what they have.
Expression.
The different, I'm not a connoisseur of such things, but they have the different shape glasses that you have, you know, the full expression of the what the wine is trying to do. So a white wine glass is shaped one way, and a Champlain flute is shaped another way, and a red wine glass is shaped a different way, and a brandy snifter is shaped a different way. Okay, so that a person should be able to experience what's inside. So here it is, what are we doing is that we're basically davening is turning this person from a mug into a piece of fine crystal. But the person likes being a mug.
Yeah.
You know, mugs are everybody's got a mug of tea in front of them. It's very, I would not give you crystal with, put glass, you know.
Don't trust
me, crystal. Sometimes you need a mug, you know, but not when you're having wine. And we are wine, we're not tea.
Mm-hmm.
So the davening is making the person into a finer receptacle for spirituality. Because the person is shaving off the coarseness of their body and their animal soul. Because the idea being is you cannot answer the question. There are questions you cannot answer with a yes answer. Like, are you asleep? Yes, I am. I am snoring. Yes, you couldn't tell. Okay, that's one question you can't answer with a yes answer. Another question you cannot answer with a yes answer is, did you have a good davening? Because by saying, if you said I had a good davening, you didn't have a good davening. Because a good davening would mean is that a person made themselves selfless. Right. As soon as a person makes themselves selfless, they can't say I.
Right.
Yeah, I had a good davening, you know. First time a good davening would mean like what the angels are clapping. Yay, bravo. Well, look what this guy's able to do. Hooray, yeah, go, you know. this is a great thing this guy did, you know. So that's not a good davening. No, sorry. There's more ego there than anything else. So the davening becomes an expression of ego. So yeah. If a person, just let him keep davening, but if a person who has a good davening shouldn't feel like I had a good davening.
Better davening, maybe.
No.
Better than this.
No. I could have done it in so much better. Because what is it that a person's doing when they're davening? Is they're removing themselves. How much nothing can you make yourself? You know, I could have done really a whole lot better. I could have been more nothing. Yeah. So if a person did a real whole lot, listen, the guy's a big garnet now, you know, he's a big nothing now.
Your James of heart gets in the way.
Everybody's got their
excuses. You're battling it.
Yeah, okay, good, fine. We're not saying not.
Like More nothing than before.
You know, the fact that a person was able to, I'm reminded of a story, I don't remember exactly all the details of it, but the Friedrich Rebbe, when he was first, I'm not sure, maybe it was before he was a rabbi even, was in Germany. And he was sitting and he was verbringing, and he was talking about having kavanas alev by davening. That a person shouldn't be so, but a person should stop and think about the words that they're saying. As is at least, for the first pasuk of Shema. Okay? So, this is a Yekke community. Okay? You know anything about Yekke Jews, they're very meticulous. And so he came back the next year, the same city, and he had an audience with somebody. And this person wanted to thank the Friedrich Rebbe and took up his advice, because now, when he says the Shema, he thinks about the word Echad for exactly a minute. Okay, this is. You know, I think about how nothing I am for exactly a minute. 1 minute.
Yes.
Okay. It's sort of like it gave the Friedrich Rebbe a smile. You know, okay, this is, you know, this, he couldn't get out of himself to stop looking at the clock. Yep. Minute went by, that's enough.
We're good, got it, yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's just, that was his nature. So, but at least he stopped.
All right.
You know, it's a good thing. So,
sure, of course.
So when a person is engaged in serving Hashem this way, and in a state of selflessness, so the more nothing a person makes themselves, the more receptacle to godliness they become. Because when you think about it, here's a mathematical question for you: if you have infinity, what could you put your infinity into?
Nothing.
Exactly. Okay. There's two ways to answer. Two ways of looking at that question. No. You can put that infinity will only that infinity will fit into nothing. It's an infinity. It doesn't have any limits.
So it's a nothing.
So you can't put it into anything. You have to put it into nothing. So the more nothing the person becomes, the greater vessel for infinity
yes.
they become.
Right.
So each and every davening that a person does, which they're making themselves less of a something, thereby they're making themselves a vehicle for more of the infiniteness of Hashem. Mm. That's why he says, that's why we have davening first thing in the morning.
Right.
Okay? Might be easier, you know, you think about it, very often, so I've got like a zillion things to do, and so I have a little something next to my pad or something, and when something will pop into my head, rather than trying to remember what it is I have to remember for after davening, because then I'm going to be davening with what I have to do after davening, so I write it down on a little pad next to it. Okay, so wouldn't it be easier if I just did all those things first, and then went and davened? No, because there's still more.
Right.
There's still going to come. They're all going to. There's always going to be what to do.
Right.
Okay. So we put it there first.
Right.
When a person is hopefully the most awake, I have this expression. I don't understand this expression. Morning person, evening person. If I'm awake, I'm moving. If I'm not awake, I'm asleep. You know, it doesn't matter, you know. If I have nothing to do in the afternoon, I'll fall asleep then too. You know, so, you know, if given the opportunity to sleep in, I'll sleep in. Given the opportunity to go to bed early, I'll go to bed early. But I never have those opportunities. So I have to wake up when I have to wake up. I have to go to sleep when I have to go to sleep. And I have to do everything in between. So I don't understand this expression, morning person,
right.
You know, or night person. Okay? I mean, it's true, when I get to a certain point, I just stop, but it's time to go to bed. I mean, you know, that's just, you know. Yeah. Okay, kidays in order. Leimer v'ahavta v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'cholu be'emes lamitai. Okay, why is this? This is relating back now to what we talked about in our introduction. Our explanation is that tshuva ilah relates back to avarabah. so that when a person gets to the point when they're saying that you love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, and we're not going to go into what that means now, we did that in the 40s, but it should be, this is really scary, the emes lamita, absolute truth.
Yeah.
Okay, it says that had the Rebbe just used, Alter Rebbe used the expression be'emes, because I said you're saying I love God be'emes. What does be'emes mean? That means unending. The word emes means from the beginning through the middle to the end. That's what true means. True means unending. As soon as it stops, it's not true. Right? You're looking at me like
I'm thinking about the pole.
Pole.
The pole and the base of the walls.
Yeah, exactly. The third, the Bria Hatikun.
Right.
Okay, the third one. Okay, the one from the beginning to the middle to the end. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Okay? So, that's hard enough. But the Alter Rebbe doesn't say emes to say, I love God, be'emes. He says, be'emes la'amitai. In a truth to the exponential level of truth. It says that the Alter Rebbe not included this expression in Tanya, he would have had 50,000 more Hasidim. Hmm. But what could he do? It says Moshe got scared of the truth too. It says when Hashem showed Moshe the Yud Gimel Midas Harachamim, when Hashem got to the word Emes, it says Moshe fell down. He says, I can't take that. Okay, that's Moshe. Okay, we don't want to know we don't want to know our own truth.
No.
Okay, because it gets scary when we start looking at ourselves and thinking, well, who am I? What's even scarier is if a person were to stop and think, what could I become today?
Yeah.
What are my capabilities? What are my potentials for today? And we're not talking, we want people to be Superman and start, flying around the skies and stopping speeding bullets and, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're talking about what is it that this person realizes today I can do. Okay? So that gets pretty scary. To be able to face that, to look at that and take that one step further. Okay, that not only can I do that, but I'm going to do it with an absolute 100%. So that's really tough. Yeah, that's really something that's quite formidable. Say that I love Hashem with all my might, which all my might means to go beyond whatever, b'chol nafshecha. B'chol nafshecha means I'm ready to die. I'm ready to be a martyr. And b'chol me'idecha means even more than that. And to do that, and I'm not just giving lip service, I'm actually doing this. This is the real stuff over here that we're talking about. V'kein v'hayu ha'dvarim ha'ele v'dibarta bam. Now the rest at that point, it's easy. You get the key card. Listen, if you could get to v'choma eidecha and mean it.
Yeah, where you.
So v'dibarta bam is nothing at that point.
Right.
Well, I should just be talking Torah all the time. I should be thinking about Elokus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. No problem. That a person, that Hashem's word should be in my mouth in truth, which means not stopping, okay, so that what is it, we have it easier than 200 years ago, we have it easier than 3 years ago, okay, because this idea of alechtecha v'derech that we have. So it used to be that if you were traveling, you're walking on the road, so you had to know stuff by heart.
Mm.
And you had to review the stuff that you knew by heart.
Mm.
It says now, on whatever mode or vehicle of transportation you happen to find yourself, all you do is plug yourself in.
All right. Your iPad.
Okay? Your iPad, iPhone, your iPhone.
Android or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You just turn it on. If you're somewhere, you're in like a connected to the internet, and you're always right there with a shear.
Right.
Okay, so v'lech l'chav ederech now is just a matter, do I want to listen to the sports scores, would I rather listen to a shear and something? Okay, that's at that point that's where our Mesiras Nefesh has to come in. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I heard this sports course this morning. The sports course from last night didn't change. Okay, so I got the scores. Okay, so now go on. It says there's a famous story involving the Rambam that I really doubt that this story is true, but it's a story which is told about the Rambam. I haven't seen it in other cultures or other situations where it's told using the same paradigm to say, oh, that tells me that it's not true. Because lots of times, very often, I'll have told this story and found out and realized that other cultures have the same story. Uh-huh. In which case, the story never happened.
Right, right.
But the point of the story is the same for all the different cultures.
Right.
Okay, so the Rambam was a Jewish doctor and advisor to the Caliph of Egypt, which the Jews in Muslim countries were considered second-class citizens.
Timmy.
Yep. There's all kinds of rules about not riding a horse, because that way you'll be on a higher level than a Muslim. You know, they shouldn't look down on a Muslim, all kinds of stuff like that. And there were things that Jews could do, Jews couldn't do, and they were very much regulated so as to keep them subservient. Mm. Okay? Which is why you have the Arabs the leaders in Arab countries that say, well, Jews in our countries were wonderful, we had no problem. It's only when they moved out and they decided they're going to get their own country, that was a big problem. When they were subservient, so they were good subservients, you know, they knew how to do it. So here it is, you have this person who is a doctor and an advisor to the caliph, and he's Jewish,
right?
So this person was very upset about it. So he made a deal with the Rambam. He said, I'll make you a bet. Okay, what's the stakes of the bet? Is if I win the bet, I get to kill you. And if you win the bet, you get to kill me. Okay, what's the bet? Is that this guy was able to train cats to be waiters.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, yes. You heard this story?
I've heard all a few books on Rambam.
You know what I'm talking about? You heard this story? So the guy can start off a period of months. He's going to train cats to be waiters. Now, yes. Cats...
He bet the Rambam?
He bet the Rambam.
But the Rambam agreed.
And the Rambam said, that's a sucker bet as far as I'd say. You can't train a cat to be a waiter.
So the Rambam was supposed to train them?
No. This guy was going to train them.
The other fellow, yeah.
I can't believe the Rambam would agree to it.
Yeah, he said, no problem.
He wouldn't kill him.
So, but anyway, so there's a certain specific day, and the invitations went out that this certain person is going to be having a party,
right.
And the waiters are going to be cats.
Right.
Okay. So comes the day, and the people are there, and the cats are on their hind legs, and they're carrying things back and forth, and they're serving, and this guy's very happy. It looks like he's going to be able to get rid of the Rambam. Okay, what happens in the middle of the meal? The Rambam took a mouse out of his pocket and let it go. And all the dishes went flying, and the cats started jumping on the tables, and all that was a big mess. Okay? Because the point of the story is that a person might be able to train themselves to be a waiter, but in actuality they're still a cat.
Yeah.
Okay, our initial who we are really never goes away.
Right.
And you know what? There really is nothing wrong with a cat being a cat and wanting to chase a mouse.
Exactly.
That's the way the cat was made.
Right.
Okay? And to try, and that the cat should think, look at me now, I'm a waiter. Okay? So, if the cat is delivering the food on a tray, so yeah, the cat is a waiter. But the cat's still a cat.
Right. You can take the boy out of the country, okay. But you can't take the country out.
Yeah, that's the way of doing it. There's another story involving the Baal Shem Tov, that you have... the Baal Shem Tov used to have what was called Kvitzas HaDerech.
Yeah.
He would travel great distances. Many, many stories of the Baal Shem Tov traveling great distances in a short time.
Right.
Okay, so you have three different individuals involved with Kvitzas HaDerech. You have the Baal Shem Tov who's sitting in the wagon. You have the wagon driver who was falling asleep.
Right.
And then you have the horse.
The horse, right.
Okay. So the Baal Shem Tov, he understands what's going on.
Right.
Alexei, the driver, he fell asleep. And all he knows is that when he gets to wherever he has to go, so the Baal Shem Tov is going to give him some vodka and he'll be happy.
Right.
Okay. The horse now, what does the horse say? The horse is thinking to himself, I am going faster than a horse should be able to go. I must no longer be a horse. I must now be a malach. I must be an angel of God.
Right. Sure.
Okay? But what happens as soon as the horse gets to wherever the horse has to go, the first thing they do is they stick
give him some oats.
They give him some oats, and he sticks his face into the oats, and he's eating.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? Forget about being an angel.
So much horse sense.
Yeah. He's still a life's affair. He's still a horse.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong. God made us who we are.
Yes.
And there is nothing wrong which the way that God made us.
Right.
We have to, just like Adam Arishon was put into the garden La'avdil L'shamra to make it better. As good as we are, we have to be better. And that's basically what we're up to till now. To be continued next time.
Very good.
We stopped at the period at the bottom of the page there.